Hello, I'm Hattie Ashton, your host, but you know that by now. Welcome to another episode in the series of TV Mums. In this episode, I'm joined by the trusty podcast co-host that is Mrs. I Love an Admin Question, Gemma Beagley. But our special guest today, and we're so excited to have her, is Tanya Moody. Now, Tanya is an actress. She has a string of theatre-nominated awards, including Olivier Darling. Her TV credits include Discovery of Witches, Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. But you, our funny mummy listeners, may know her best for her role as Meg in Motherland, of which she won the RTS Breakthrough Award this year. Meg joined Motherland in the second series as the alpha party hard play hard mum. So this was a really fun, lively chat. We both totally fell in love with Tanya, and we talk about her inspirations and influences for Meg, and about going from anonymous, she says, jobbing actor, but I wouldn't describe being nominated for an Olivier as a jobbing actor, to being recognised, and how she dealt with that. She also tells us her favourite TV mums and all important questions like, what's your favourite takeaway? This is the bare things that we like to get down to on Funny Mummies. I'll say no more and let you enjoy this show. This is the Funny Mummies podcast, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Hattie Ashdown, comedian, writer, actress and mother to two very lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, arts and everyone who can help us in this crazy world of parenting. So settle in as we find the funny side of parenting and being bloody great women. Okay, so welcome, Tanya Moody, to the Funny Mummies.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you for joining us via Zoom, as we do today. Zoom is the new Weatherspoon, as I keep saying. Or something a bit more classy than that, really. So we like to do something right at the top, just to sort of warm you up. A lot of the time when you're a mum, maybe not so much now because your child is older, we'll get to that later, but you don't get to finish any conversations. And so this is like a quick way to find out a little bit about you. So it's just a little quick fire round thing. Okay. And so you just have a multiple choice. It's really highbrow, so watch out, okay? So, number one, tantrums or teething? Which would you?
Can we say neither? They're kind of like synonymous with one another. Oh God!
I know. Which one would you rather deal with?
Teething.
Yeah.
Well, when a little, you know, you get one little fang come through, and that's kind of cute. And you can deal with the sort of grizzlies. But the tantrum was like, I don't know you anymore.
You're not anymore. Oh God.
Yeah.
Just evil. WhatsApp, mum's WhatsApp, so the class WhatsApp, or no thanks? They don't want to be.
Because normally I despise WhatsApp groups and I always remove myself from them, and people always hate me. I always make enemies because I'm one of those people that just drops out and then they think that I have a problem with them. And it's like, no, it's not you. I have an issue with WhatsApp. I hate it. However, I have to say the mum's WhatsApp group, which you feel obliged to be on, otherwise you're out of the loop.
Yeah.
So I've managed to make peace with it, and I tell a lot of jokes on it, or like, I'm very irreverent, and they'll talk about something serious, and then I'll lower the tone, and so that makes me feel more comfortable.
And do they laugh? Do they do a little emoji?
They do kind of WhatsApp, I mean, the whole emoji thing, like, ha ha. Sometimes I'm like, oh, should I do that joke? Is that too risque? Or let's see where the people are at today. Do you know what I mean?
Is it like too, I'm always like, it's, to be honest, when I do something, it's always a bit tumbleweed, and then someone will do, honestly, it's really embarrassing, and then someone else will do like a really obvious corny joke, and they're like, ha 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 ha.
They're not my crowd.
They're not my crowd, Gemma. We've had this discussion. They're not my crowd.
It kind of changed when one of the mums in our group accidentally sent us a text that she meant to send another friendship group. And you was a lot dirtier than ours.
Yeah.
So then I was like, okay.
Now we can play.
Now we're cooking on gas. Yeah, wicked.
Oh, I love that. And I think, yeah, in case anyone's listening, obviously you really need these WhatsApp mum groups at the moment. I think they are a bit of a lifesaver with, are they in school today or not? What is I think it's just, yeah, so with the mindless sort of conversations or stuff that's like, yeah, you can just email the school about that. You don't need to. Okay, city break or beach?
Oh, shit. Why are you guys making this so hard?
I'm really making it because we're getting in.
Okay, I'm going to say city break.
Okay.
Only because that means probably it's just my partner and I.
Yeah.
It's been a quick break, and they're always the most successful holidays because you're not dealing with having to organise to sort of be a childcare at the same time, you know, and then it's
days out.
Exactly. If it's city break, I know it's a romantic break, you know, for us, and we can do whatever we want, and it's great.
Yeah. You know? I was going to say, actually, that question should be sort of like city break or beach since having children, really, shouldn't it? Because it's different.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cook or take away?
Oh, definitely cook. I'm a massive cooking fan. I love it. I love cooking.
Do you? I've got the sense of that from your Instagram.
Yeah. So much. And the thing is, we do have takeaway, and Friday is sort of designated takeaway day. And so my daughter looks forward to it. She's kind of a creature of habit, which is fine. And at the same time, we're not obliged to get it if we don't want it on Friday. Because, you know, you can deliver different things. So we generally end up ordering three different meals from different places.
Oh,
anyway.
Really?
Yeah. Because no one wants the same thing ever.
God, the Uber drivers must love you. They're like queuing up.
Yeah.
Can I ask about that? Because this is admin, really.
Gemma loves to come in with an admin question.
I'm an admin. Yeah. Because I've never done that before. It's like we're having one type. So is it the same guy that turns up with three meals?
No, sadly, you're not allowed. Sadly, you can't say to one guy, oh, yeah, hey, Dave, do you mind popping by the... I wish you could do... you mind just nipping by the Indian and getting it, thanks so much, Dave. See you later, kind of thing. But no, unfortunately, got to. So basically, the question is just, we just start with a question, what do you want?
Right.
You know, and then, and generally, my partner always says curry. Like, it's a no-brainer for him. It's very rare.
Same.
He's a complete curry obsessive. And my daughter, it could be, you know, 13-year-olds, could be anything, any time, you know. I want fresh.
What was the last thing? What do they eat?
Yeah, what does she do? Is she quite an educated palate, or?
Well, it's sometimes, it really depends on her mood. So when she's in
sophisticated,
the
I should have said.
Yeah, in the more sophisticated side of her spectrum, she'll say, I want Japanese. And then generally, I'll get it at the same time, because I really love Japanese. And so, because she likes all just, she likes the sushi, she likes the
wow
soup, what do you call it, you know, the like with the noodles, udon, whatever.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Ramen.
She loves that. They're both, yeah, ramen. Oh god, her, my partner and her are ramen specialists. I mean, they will tell me if this is a good one, if the noodle enough, if it's been well. I mean, my god, that ramen. I had to learn. I was like, oh, I'm not a ramen fan, but they actually turned me on to it. And then when she's more junky end of her spectrum, it's always KFC, generally.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, and so you know, if you're having a separate one that no one else is having, is it more likely to be...
If I'm having a separate one that no one else is having, it's Jamaican food.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lady who sends, she actually WhatsApps me her menu every week.
Oh.
Yeah. And then a member of the family drops it off, and you know, and I just sort of pay her like direct, you know, sort of direct transfer sort of thing.
And am I allowed to ask, are you based in London?
Yeah, I'm Southeast London.
Southeast. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you're not that far from me then, I don't think.
I'm actually seeing you right now through my
I'm actually outside your window. Can you imagine if we just asked where we all live and we could have just sat in the garden and done this? I can't believe we didn't have that conversation. Well, I'm on the borders. I'm in Welling. So sometimes it's classed as South East London, sometimes it's classed as Kent. But it
as Kent, yeah.
It does come under. I used to live near Peckham. I used to live near there.
Oh God, Charlie, we all used to live near Peckham.
We all did.
Priced out, mate.
And then I got priced out. I did.
Oh, absolutely dying out. Yeah.
Oh. Anyway, I could just talk about food the whole time. So let's talk about Motherland, because this is I think going to go out as our first in the series of looking at mums on TV is the sort of theme from a broad spectrum of just talking to wonderful people like yourself who have played mums on TV and you know, mums that you love on TV maybe. So yeah, let's talk about your character Meg in Motherland. She's I mean, how would you describe, what sort of mum is she?
Oh, well, you know, they sort of set her up in that in the second series as this super mum. You know, like that, it's, you know, that there is a kind of real life businesswoman, I can't remember her name, because she's actually name checked in the series. Mm. And she's got, you know, an incredible number of kids, and she's like a hugely successful businesswoman. I can't remember her name. I'm sure, like, one of you is, like, shouting it out right now, kind of thing, because...
Is it Instagram mum, did you say? Sorry, no.
No, she's
a businesswoman.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure your listeners right now are going, oh, it's... Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, yeah, so she's... they set her up as being... I suppose the joke is that... Because, you know, in real life, we know that the concept of being a supermum is actually, it's not possible. It's just all hype. You know, something's got to give. When you have lots of plates spinning, something's got to give. Do you know what I mean?
It's like, yeah, absolutely.
It's like throw money at it. Do you know what I mean? If you can throw lots of money at it.
Yeah. Yes.
There's still going to be things that are going to give. Like, oh, I never see my kids. Well, there's going to be an effect. That's, of course, there's going to be an effect. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I suppose the joke in Motherland is that on the surface, it all seems to be working. Like, they can't sort of pull her up in anything that's kind of not working. So not only is she really successful professionally and has three kids of her own with her successful, handsome husband, but also he two kids as well, who are her stepkids, who adore her. And they, you know, they just bought this big house, you know, opposite the character of Julia, Anna Maxwell Martin's character. And, you know, and she can drink and kind of do as much drugs as she wants, never gets hungover, and, you know, that stuff. And they just keep going, how do you do this? So that's the, I suppose, you know, that's the joke, that she doesn't seem to drop any plates ever.
I guess for me, she comes over to being able to do all that, because, she's just... I feel like I do know some mums like her, but it's because they've got that sort of chill. She's just so chilled about it.
She doesn't eat. She doesn't rent out space in her brain to negative, you know, self-censure. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I find, I don't know, someone might like really tear me down for this, because I sort of sound like my mum when I say this, because my mum thinks in these ways. But it's kind of a blokey way of thinking. My mum always think like this, and girls think like this, but sometimes I've sort of taken on board that, because I find that with my partner and with both of my ex-husbands, darling. That's a whole other story.
Oh, she's Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah. I actually have the same astrological configuration of Elizabeth Taylor, which freaked me out when I found it. But anyway, moving on, I digress. But my partner does this thing where, you know, he goes to bed and he literally falls asleep like that. You know?
Okay.
And then like sleep through like a baby, and I get up and I'll go, hey, how did you sleep? He's like, oh, great. You're kind of like, oh, you literally don't think of anything, do you? Like, nothing eats away at you ever. You know, even when I just don't get that. I think there's just some, like, I have yet to meet a woman like that, quite frankly. Do you know what I mean? Are you like that, Gemma?
No. I just wanted. Do you think that it changes when you become a mum, a parent. So do you think that, because I wonder, because that I was a bit less worry-y when, before I had a mum. I don't know, almost like the responsibility had put this concern on me and maybe like a heaviness.
I mean, it's a slight, it's nature nurture, isn't it? Like, what is it? Is it our nature to be like that? And because, I don't know, maybe it's something to do with estrogen and it makes you, you know, your brain just constantly. Or is it, you know, is it nurture? Because this thing of like how we're raised as girls or to be, you know, because I went to a Roman Catholic convent school. So that whole oppression of like good and bad and being a good girl or being a bad girl or, you know, all that stuff. Was just like put on our shoulders, like it's just such a weight. So, you know, from a young age, I didn't sleep properly. Always like,
And did it seem like the men have the easier time, as it were, in some way, like the, because that thing of. Putting more worry on women was sort of like from a young age. We've talked about this a lot, not a lot, but on this podcast, that it feels like right from a little age, the girl of the family. I was taken along to my nan when she was really poorly, and you know, and my mum would say, "Oh, dress up as a nurse and stuff like that." And I,
oh my gosh, and I really think. I wasn't expecting that.
I was five.
Oh my god!
I just think if my mum didn't have any boys, she wanted a boy. That's another topic. That she, if I was a boy, I'd better have been like, "Oh no, go outside and kick a football," and like the girls, it's like I don't know. But I think that's why we become more nurturing and stuff like that, because I was very much included in that world all the time. Of like, so that's why with my boys, I drag them into anyone who's half dying. No, I'm joking, but going back to saying about your husband, I think it's interesting because my husband is really quite. I didn't know this until about 3 years into our relationship how actually he suffers with anxiety, and he will lay awake at night wondering, but he doesn't when it comes to any parenting things. So,
interesting, right?
Yeah,
that in itself is interesting.
You like, I'll say, "Well, I'm worrying about this and I'm worrying about that." He's like, "Ah, I'd be fine." And like, he just took the little 2-year-old out now, and he came back and he's like purple because it's so cold. And I was like, "You never wrap him up enough." You know? Yeah. And because he's just, he's got, which that stereotypical man attitude where we're like, "Oh, he's all right," you know? But so what's that about? I don't know.
I don't know, because I don't have a boy either. So I have nothing to, you know, compare my journey with my daughter too. And also my daughter's a very particular personality. Maybe if I had another girl and she was like, maybe she'd be completely different. Do you know what I mean? I mean, my daughter, I wonder if she, I don't know yet if she's a particularly angsty person. I mean, she's quite a deep thinker, but at the same time, she's very pragmatic in a lot of ways.
Okay.
And I feel like I've put a lot of effort into hardwiring, like actually training her to sleep through the night and to kind of, and to not get into my bed, to not wake up, to kind of work through her own anxieties and sort that out in her own space. That's always been really important to me, because I've wanted to not only instill in her a sense of "you got this," but also
almost like that, like when they're a baby, like the self-soothing, so you're kind of continuing that.
Exactly. And I did that all through, like, I did what was called attachment parenting. It was just like, I just stumbled upon it, obviously, because I mean, I had to kind of late, as it were, inverted commas, at 35.
Me too.
Geriatric parent, I think they call you.
Oh, I know, so, after 35, they call it.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. So anyway, and I just kind of was reading all around all the stuff I didn't know anything about. I don't know, you just kind of figure it out as you go along, don't you? I found this book on attachment parenting, which is basically, because it's all supposition, right? It's all just like you're hypothesizing until you do it. So people can give you all sorts of books, but you can't actually say that's definitely going to work until you get your kid, and then you know what your kid's like, and do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just found this book and I was like, "Oh, I can buy that. In theory, that sounds logical to me. So I'm going to give that a go." And their whole principle was, if you basically, you wear your kid in a sling all the time and you sleep next to them and you allow them to get breast milk whenever they want, mm-hmm. anytime they want, they just help themselves. And you never let them cry, basically, because they're always on you. It's not that you don't let them, but they don't need to cry because they're always on you. So their needs are always met. Because you can, you know, you can feel, oh, they need a burp, or they need this or whatever, or oh, they need a nappy change. And so because they're never having to ask for things or wait for things, then the principle is that they get really confident because they're kind of being hardwired to go, I don't have to worry about that, it'll come.
Ah.
Oh, I need a martini, oh, it'll be here in a second. You know, it'll be here, you know. Oh, I need a foot massage, oh yes, it'll come. That kind of thing. So, and I was like, oh yeah, in theory, I guess that makes sense. If I was always, if anything I wanted, I just got, then you'd kind of not worry about, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you take away the element of anxiety. So I thought, I'll give that a go. And it just so happened that me doing that with Willow, that she ended up being phenomenally placid.
Wow.
And yeah, she was like the chillest of the chill babies.
So then when it came to her being a bit older though, and obviously going into a bed, it didn't cause any problems?
Well, so then I just had to be a bit canny because I have a very good friend who, she co-slept with all three of her kids, and she took me aside and she said, listen, Tanya, don't do what we did. We let them co-sleep with us in our bedroom and they never left. So we had to change bedrooms because it was just so disruptive for them and they refused to leave. So we had to move. She's like, don't do what I did. You've got to figure that out before. I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you so much for telling me. Because I couldn't leave my bed. I was like, no, that's my bedroom. I can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So instead of getting her a cot from like literally from when she was an infant,
yeah,
I got a futon on the ground so that if she ever rolled off, obviously she's just rolling, you know, just under the ground. You know what I mean? You're all like down there on the ground. So it's just a futon mattress, not even the base, just a mattress.
Yeah, I know it well for my student days.
You know what I mean? I kind of bolted it up to make it as comfortable for myself as possible. And then I put her to bed in that with my boob in her mouth, like feeling until she went to sleep. And then I would extract myself and then leave, basically. And then if I heard her grizzle in the night, I'd come back in, feed her, and then extract myself and she fell asleep sort of thing. So she always kind of got used to being in her room.
Yeah, yeah.
In a bed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did it like that. And I breastfed her for like 2.5 years as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm giving you a clap for that because that's bloody hot.
Girl,
happy
sale. Good girl.
And I spent some, and not to repeat what you said, Tanya, but I spent some, in my early 20s, you know, obviously years and years before motherhood, I spent some time in a community where, same thing. So for 2 years, the kid would be in a sling and co-slit everything. And the only reason a child would cry would be if they're sick.
Yeah.
Like it's the only, so you'd know that they were sick, and you're right. And like confidence thing, I saw it with my own eyes. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I felt it. I felt I was taking away a lot of guesswork on my part, because you can kind of then go, oh, she needs this or she needs that. Now, also, by no means am I saying to your listeners, this is the only way to do it. If you don't do it like that, then you fail.
Yeah.
Having breastfed for 2.5 years, like, you know, I'm not saying that at all, because every kid is different. Every person's situation is different. I mean, I think the only reason why I carried on with breastfeeding was that I happened to have a mate who had, her kid was already like 2 or something, and she was studying to become a midwife. And when she, and I've known her for a really long time, and so I was about 4 months pregnant. She said, can I come over and visit you? And she came over and she just sat me down. She's like, look, I'm just going to give you the skinny on all this stuff. And she was like, breastfeeding hurts a lot. And she's like, just keep going. There's going to be a period where it's really, really painful and you want to give up. Just get beyond that. And I was like, oh, hey, wow, thanks for warning me. Like, shit, I had no idea. You know, it's that thing that I think we miss that a lot. I think I'm speaking generally now.
Mm.
Just that thing of like advice from other people who've done it before, that kind of community thing of like, let me come and talk to you about what this is going to be like.
Yeah.
And my mum, and the other person I got advice from was my mum, who had started her career as a midwife. So I was surrounded by people within college
who were
okay, so this is going to happen and this is going to be terrible and it's going to be really painful, but then what you've got to do is you've got to do this. And I go, okay. So every time I hit those like walls when I was with my infant daughter, I was like, okay, I gotta get beyond this whole razor blade thing on the lipples. Oh my god, you know, this is really painful. And then we go, okay, this is how you're gonna heal it up. You gotta take, my mum, like she said, what they used to do in the wards in Jamaica is they get bare light bulbs, you know, like those table lamps. And they've got to be like old-fashioned light bulbs, not like the kind of ones now that are cool. Like, you know, you get light bulbs now that don't have any heat.
Yeah.
But
the old-fashioned light bulbs, you know, the ones you used to touch as a kid and be like, light in your room as a kid, and it's like, you know, hazardous.
I think you can still get them from Poundland, to be honest.
You know what I mean? Those light bulbs. And she said, right, because when your nipple is all kind of like wet and chopped up by your kid's gums and everything.
Oh, God.
Don't bother using that cream stuff that you get. So she's like, they're just garbage. They just don't work at all. And she said, you got to just sit with your bare boob in front of one of those bulbs on, and the heat from the lamp starts to heal it up. And it feels so soothing as well.
Ooh.
And after a few, if you keep doing that after a few goes, she said, you've got to be careful because you can get like almost like a sunburn. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like chilblains.
Yeah, they, you know. And eventually that helps the nipple callus because it's like, it's drying it up and then you go in for another feed and it wets it and then you dry it up again, you go in. So the nipple callus quickly, do you know what I mean? So the pain then...
So am I right in thinking that that's when the pain stops, is because your nipple becomes callous and therefore insensitive?
Exactly. You don't play guitar and your fingertips are all...
That's
why it stops.
Yeah.
Oh. So that cream that it's like a kind
Lanolin.
Of... clear. Yeah, it, that, I mean, yeah, so it's just...
stopping the natural barrier that you want to happen.
Exactly. But again, if any of your listeners are going, I'm going to try that, I just say, you've got to be careful because you don't want to burn your
boob. Don't burn yourself.
Just be really...
And it has to be an old, absolutely inefficient...
Yes.
Light bulb.
One of those things. And maybe... I just enjoy it so much because it's just so soothing, you know?
Yeah, that... I remember, I think, a couple of times breastfeeding on the beach, and that sort of felt nice. Maybe that was why then, but...
You know, because the heat, right? It's so nice. And then also, she said, my mum taught me that, so the baby, when she gets nappy rash, my poor daughter, she got nappy rash so badly because I was changing her in bad light. I had no idea that you need to have light so you can really see. So, because she was sort of on one side of my bed on a changing thing, but the light was like behind me, the window's behind me, so I never really saw what was going on. And she started grizzling for a bit. I was like, I wonder why. And then I took her into another room. I was like, she's just got a nappy rash. Bless her heart.
Oh, gosh.
That was like, no problem. Just get a blow dryer. And the kind where you can control the temp, so it's not like super hot. You get the kind where it can be like just like warm, you know. And she said, when you change her, you know, wipe it down, and then get the blow dryer and go, and just blow dryer. And they love it. They love the noise. They love the feeling of the warm air on the little pushes. And she just put her legs open like that and just be dry.
This is going to sound dodgy, but I have before, bless him, when it's a bit sore, I've sort of blown.
Yeah.
You know?
He
loved it. Especially because he's always been really, he's two now, but keeping still. So it used to be like a way of keeping him still while I'm getting the cream and the wipes. And Oh my gosh. But it's so interesting you're saying about people giving advice, because people often, like after childbirth, we just done a series on people telling their birth stories, and whether it's childbirth or the breastfeedings, you get a lot of people say, I wish someone had told me. I think, like you say, there's a way of saying it, and maybe from the right person. You know, for me, I look back now and I'm thinking, actually I don't think my mum or sisters really said anything, because I think their thing was like, just see what she what it's like for her. Like, I think they were thinking they want to scare me. But so a lot of my advice ended up being just some crazy woman on a bus, and you're like, well, yeah. I'm not going to listen to her when she's like, what you got to do is, you know.
That's so funny. Oh my God.
Well, we did a whole live podcast about terrible advice and stuff, didn't we, Gemma? And there was some corkers, and it's always from strangers. But I've had strangers on the bus like whip. My oldest had a dummy, and like whip the dummy out of the mouth and stuff. And it's like, oh, you don't want him having that, you know. And it's like, oh,
somebody put that like a baby.
Yeah.
They would have lost their hand. If that was
it's me. Always some old woman. God bless them. Hello, we are still doing our free highlight on small businesses, and today is Jodie Collins from Mondo and Minikin. I'll let her tell you more. I'm biased on this one because our club, Screaming with Laughter, which is a lunchtime comedy club where you can bring babies or you can get a sitter and come on your own, we've collabed with Jodie. So I'll let her tell you more about what they do.
If your lockdown, like mine, consisted of stepping on Lego and Googling nap techniques, then I imagine you are now looking for things to do with your small people. Here at Mondo and Minikin, we bring you a What's Happening for babes, bumps and toddlers across South London. Cherry-picking activities and classes with a difference, so check out our page for a veritable feast. We've got your back in lockdown 2.0 and beyond, plus we collab with brilliant local folk to bring you goodies and discounts too. So please give us a follow. Search at Mondo and Minikin on Insta and join the small society.
But don't forget, if you would like to be highlighted on an episode, just get in contact via screamingwithlaughter.com. If you have a small business or you would like to nominate a small business that you think needs a lift. So, Meg is quite a party animal in motherland, and I know you've been asked a lot about are you similar to Meg in any way, so I'm not gonna make you go through Google it, love, just Google it. If you listen to this, just Google past articles that you've written. But I'm just interested because obviously I follow you on Instagram, and that's where we all get all our information these days, let's be honest. And
it's so honest Instagram. Yeah. It's such an accurate portrayal of people's lives.
Oh, don't. You know. Do you like? Because I literally have days where I'm like, I can't look on it today because, like, some days a certain person will, like, I'll like really like them, and then another day they just can be a bit of a trigger for my anxiety. I mean, what's that all about? I don't know.
I know, because we're human, isn't it? That's just the way it is, you know?
So some days I'm like, oh, yeah, you go, girl. And then another day I'm like, oh, gosh, she's really annoying me.
Yeah. Normally I really make myself say something positive, particularly in those posts that make me, when you feel that little twinge of like, I'm a terrible person, you know, based on something you've read or something else, someone else's happiness, and you get a twinge of, oh, that means I'm bad or I'm not worthy or something. It's usually those posts that I make myself say something really positive to them, like really genuinely, and that's bloody, bloody brilliant, well done. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm like, get over yourself, Tanya. Like, you know, it's just a response. It's our lesser self, our little ego, for some reason deciding to punish ourselves for what? For what exactly? Do you want their new kitten that they're talking about? No,
and that a bit of advice. My mum was always so good at that. When I'm talking about really just my envy or jealousy of someone else, you know, or and she said, "Well, would you?" Do you want her life? Do you want her husband? No, I don't. Right, well, there you go. Like, what is it you're...
Yeah. Exactly. It's because it's so easy then to solve, isn't it? It's so easy. If someone says, right, for example, oh, I just got cast in a new series in LA or something, and I'm moving out and I'm doing this series in LA. And if, for example, I mean, I to be honest with you, I never feel envious about things like that. I don't know. Because in my head, I'm always like, what's for you won't go by you. So if another actor has got something, I'm always like, well, that's good for them. That's what they were meant to be doing.
Oh, that's so good.
well, this, you know, it's just like, if I was meant to be doing it, then I'd be doing it. It's just one of those things. But if, so for example, if I did feel envious about that, or whatever it is that, I don't know what it is that bothers me, because sometimes it changes from week to week, doesn't it? It depends what mood you're in. I always ask myself, well, do I want that? Do I want to be doing that voiceover job or whatever? If the answer is yes, then I'm like, well, then sort it out.
Yeah.
No, I do it. If the answer is no, then it's like, well, then what is the problem? You know, what is it? Do you need a nap right now? Go have a nap. You know what I mean? Yeah. Go have a cookie. You'll be okay.
go and blow a blow dryer on your nether regions. Come on, chill out.
I'll get someone else to blow. Have you got any favourite mums on TV, past or present?
I think maybe I quite like people like Adina on Ab Fab. That kind of mum who... Because I'm a bit like that in a way with my daughter, you know, minus the mainlining stolly bollies. But I'm very sweary and irreverent, and I have a really dirty sense of humour. And I don't, I have a, I mean, people out there might be listening thinking, wow, Tanya, that's really bad. But it's just me, and I have never really edited myself or put on a filter with my daughter.
Right.
I've just been like, oh my God, that's so funny. And it might be something really dirty, really sweary. And I'll go, look, look, that's hilarious. Well, that's hilarious. And she might find it hilarious as well, but she might be like, okay, that's inappropriate, mother. So she's kind of become a little bit like Adina's daughter as well.
Okay.
A little bit. Like I was showing her this thing online where someone had like made up this kind of tune with the word cunt in it, like repeated again and again, and I was just dying laughing. And I showed Willow, I was like, look, look, this is hilarious. And Willow was like, and so she kind of laughed and then kind of went and did her thing, and then I started to sing it, and she's like, can you not just no
sorry. Yeah, okay, mum. Yeah.
I unfortunately I have this thing where I'm kind of brutally honest with her all the time. I find it, because the thing is, I've always felt like if I white lie to her, then I don't know where it ends.
Yeah.
I don't know. But what happens when I get bored of that lie and then I suddenly change my tune? What happens then? So from the beginning, I was always like, Santa didn't buy you a present, Leno. There's no such thing as Santa. I bought it. I had to work hard. I am
the
money.
Did you? I love that.
Yeah. Look, it's my money. I had to earn it. I was a single mum. I had to put that money aside and get a Christmas present. I don't want her to think that some white man broke into my house and gave a present.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I love
I'm
it.
Sorry, but no. No.
Yeah.
That's my money. That's mama's money.
Yeah.
She needs to be happy. Do you know what I mean?
And did you, with that, did you tell her that other kids believe it or something? Or were you just like...
Yeah, how did you explain that?
In terms of other kids?
Mm.
Well, you know, she's so... my daughter has this... I have a lot of respect for my kids. She's quite... She does have a degree of compassion, and she really...
And consideration.
She gives people space to believe what they want to believe.
Mm.
So she would come in and go, and she'd go, oh, you know, oh, Billy thinks Santa's real. Well, okay, well, you know, that's cool with Billy, you know. But I'm not telling, baby, I can't tell you that either.
Can I ask a question about the TV mum thing, Tanya?
Mm, yeah.
So I'm just wondering that you as an actor, did you have feelings about then becoming an age where you were then being cast, you're being put up for castings as a parent? And was it, what, like, how was it for you?
I found it was so annoying. It was annoying. I think the first time that I realised that this is going to be a problem is I played a TV mum guy that I knew, because he was at RADA several years after me, so I knew him from there. And at the time, I think I was 30. I think I'd already had Willow, so maybe I was 38 or something, and he was, I think, about 32, and I was playing his mum.
Oh my God.
Yeah. can tell you how furious I was inside. Because you don't turn down the job.
Yeah.
That, you know, do you remember that? What was that sort of Gladiator one where Angelina Jolie played like Brad Pitt's mum?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
It's like that, isn't it? You go, this. You just get so frustrated, like.
And it's always, I don't know if it's particularly in commercials. I remember my friend actually, she went to Rod. I was trying to work it the same years as you, but I think she was after you. And I remember her doing a car advert, and she had to be like the mum and the dad. And then it was that thing of like the dad looking way older, than her. And it's like, what? When are they going to be brave enough and do it the other way around? And it starts coming in when you don't expect. You're like, oh no, I'm in the mum category now. But
Weird. It's weird. But at least with roles like Meg, then it all just feels sweet. It's like the sweet spot. Mm. There's like honesty about it, and there's like, you know, it's just letting women be women, and just it's all just in the right place.
Well, that's what
strange thing.
You were saying, Gemma, wasn't you, before, like, about how we think Motherland's probably one of the first programs to have mums, because the kids aren't in it a lot, is good. It's, you know, but I think it's one of the first to really have just showing all different types of mums and being very very honest, rather than just this kind of head of the family, Nellie Boswell, whatever, in Breads, who's just, you know what I mean? Like, and I can't think of another show that's been similar to it, really.
And I Tin Star, which is a Sky program with Tim Roth. I'm in of it, and I play a mum in that as well. And if it's and it's the same sweet spot as Motherland is, but like the sort of inverted, it's like the dark side of it. Do you know what I mean? So it's
Oh, well, that's on my list. I want to watch that, because
like playing a mum that has to make kind of decisions that normally mums don't have to make, sort of thing, which I really, really, really liked. Mm-hmm. And not shying away from the fact that she had a family life too. I really like that.
Oh, we'll put that on the list to watch. Anything else I haven't covered, Gemma?
I think that's it.
You wanted to, you don't lie, you wanted to ask about Star Wars.
I did. But quite a specific, not quite a specific question. If it's okay.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Do you, because you've been in a Star Wars film, are you obliged to go to these fucking things with the people where you sit there and you have to give autographs and have your fucking photo taken?
Well, I have been asked to do them, and every time I've been busy, so I haven't been able to do them. And also, so I think before, the first time I was asked to do it, not only was I busy, but then the pandemic happened. So now it's not. And so the next time I was asked to do it, I think I was, it's the format's changed now, where you can do it like remotely, you know, they'll send you a thing, you sign it, you send it off. Which I haven't done.
Again. What, signing autographs?
Yeah. I'm actually, this is going to sound really weird, but hand on heart, I'm actually, I have a really terrible shyness. Even though I'm on Instagram and all that, there's an aspect of my life that I keep very, very private and personal. And I actually find fan letters and things like that very difficult to answer. I'm like a tortoise, I just go into my shell. So if there is ever written to me and I've not answered back, please don't take it personally. I just get really, I get overwhelmed a little bit.
But with people if they're praising you and stuff a lot?
Yeah, or... I get really overwhelmed. I get really, it just freaks me out for some reason. I mean, you know, and I have some very good friends who know me really well, and they kind of are very supportive of me through it. But I mean, there's one, I mean, when I started to get attention around Motherland and stuff, it was a massive adjustment that I had to make. I phoned my best friend just in tears, because I just didn't know how to process it. It was a whole new shift of, like, you know, going from being utterly anonymous jobbing actor to, you know, lots of people going, hi!
Right.
in a really nice way. I mean, people are really nice. But even that, I just had a bit of a breakdown. I was really panic attacky about it. Do you know what I mean? And then my friend was just really lovely to me. And she's like, look, I got you. I know you. I know this is going to be hard for you. I expected it to be hard for you. Don't worry about it. You'll adapt. And, you know, that calmed me down a lot.
Oh, bless.
Yeah.
And I guess... Yeah.
So is anonymity then was important to you, or still is important to you? Yeah.
I love it. I mean, I don't understand people who want fame. Not say that I'm famous, because that's not that at all. You know how some people, there's a thing where some people, like, they want fame or that's an important part of their...
recognition or something, isn't it?
Yeah. To me it's a side effect of my work.
Okay.
It's just one of those things that it either happens or it doesn't, but if it does, it's just a side effect. It's not a goal.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this here. Let's see if I can play us out with your chosen track. First of all, I'll say thank you, and then I'm going to let you introduce the song, and maybe you can say why you've chose it. But thank you so much, Tanya. We've been wanting to get you for so long. And,
yes.
Sorry for the crossed calendar stuff.
Oh, well, no, you've had your accident with your ankle. There's been...
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan, so I'm so excited. And don't worry, I won't say hello to you if I see you in the street.
I'll burst into tears.
So when you chose this song, I know you can't judge people by their music choice. I was straight away like, oh yes, I love her, because I love this band. And do you want to introduce it?
Yeah, this is Identity by X-Ray Specs. And so I know it's not officially just by like a female, you know, singer, but I mean, obviously she's the lead singer of the group,
yeah.
Polly Stein. I love polystyrene. I love who she was. I love that, you know, there hadn't been a woman of colour leading that kind of group for her. I just love how she chose her name, because, you know, she was just like that at that time in cultural history, you know, youth were seen as being like a, you know, disposable byproduct kind of thing. And I just love, she was just, oh, she's just beautiful and fun and funny, and a talented songwriter. And the lyrics of Identity, to me, they hit me so hard, because for me that's exactly what I fought for in my industry. The reason why I've stuck to it
for
the last like 30 years and not given up is because, you know, it says, you know, identity is the crisis. When you look in the mirror, do you see yourself? Do you see yourself on the TV screen? Do you see yourself in the magazine? Because it's like, if you can see it, then you can be it. And I feel like I've not one ever pushed me out, you know, take my space at the table. I've always been like, I'm here and you can't get rid of me. And so she was singing about that, you know, before we were even given a space at the table as, you know, creators of colour and all that.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? She was, and this is what was it, around 80 something, wasn't it? So, God.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, right, let's play it. Thank you so much.
And, released 78, actually. 1978.
Yeah. Yes, you always think these things are 80s, but you sort of go, actually, it's bloody late 70s, bloody hell.
Yeah. Amazing.
Right, let's put it on. Thank you so much. I hope you come back. We often have reoccurring funny mummies. So thank you for being our funny mummy today.
Thanks.
There we go.
Saying goodbye to all the listeners. Bye.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast in association with The Other Woman Show with me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you to Gemma Beagley and our guest today. Please see the write-up in this episode to find out how you can follow us and our guest online. This show is edited by Alex Holland, recorded via Zoom. The show also goes out on Thursdays on Soho Radio as part of the Other Woman Collective, where often you can hear the full music version of the show. If you'd like to support us and get lots of goodies, like a video version where you can see our mugs, go to Funny Mummies on Patreon, where you can buy us a coffee or maybe an hour's childcare. Thanks very much for listening. Keep subscribing, and telling your friends. It really, really does help. We'll see you next time for a dose of Mum and Tonic.